Thanks so much for joining us on WTOP.
It's good to be here.
So before we get into the actual restoration itself, explain how a movie like this is chosen to be one to be restored. Because obviously there's so many great movies out there. How did this one actually get chosen for the restoration?
Well, these three have been on the docket for a very long time. These are three of the towering classics of the golden age of art house cinema, and they've been decades in the wake of their negatives having burned in a fire in 1993. And so they've been very hard to see, and very hard to see in good versions. So,
talk to me a little bit about that fire.
Yeah, it was 1993 in London, and the film had all been brought there in anticipation of doing some preservation work and some new prints. And I don't exactly know what work done in London, but in one of those real tragedies, a nitrate explosion burst in the lab adjacent to where the film was stored, and the negatives of the Apu trilogy, along with a number of other sensitive and 40 some Ealing comedies that were absolutely essential, English classics, were damaged in that fire and largely destroyed.
Wow, that must have been just heartbreaking for everyone, especially cinephiles. It reminds me, there's a line in, I think it's Path or Panchali, where he says, I wanted to be a writer, but now my manuscripts are all worm-eaten, and it reminds me of the negatives are all burnt now. Mm-hmm. But so how did you find, what print did they end up getting their hands on for this restoration? What are you using now?
Well, it turned out that they weren't destroyed.
Oh, okay.
We always that they were completely destroyed in the fire. And it wasn't until after that we learned that there was some more material that the Academy had saved. And they had apparently gone to the lab after the fire and said, send us everything that you have mm-hmm. on the Ray films. And they stored it all this time, even though the film was deemed unprintable, which basically means it's useless from a photochemical restoration perspective. Mm-hmm. They still saved it, I guess, in the hope that someday it would be useful, or maybe with the sense that, camera negatives, because they are the original pieces of film that pass behind the lens when the director makes the shot, have a kind of a sacred quality, and that they need to be preserved. Who knows why they did it, but they did. They stayed there for 20 years, well vaulted and just the right temperature conditions and all that to keep them from degrading. And by 2013, when we were finally invited to come and look in those boxes, the technology had changed such that if we could actually scan the film, meaning if the film would survive scanning, mm-hmm. we felt fairly confident that we might be able to preserve some of the image that was on it. And this is really where Lee comes into the picture, because he was there for all this stuff. He can tell you what it was like to open those cans and what you found inside. But the upshot of it is that while the film had burnt sprocket holes that wouldn't have held it on a regular film carriage for any kind of optical printing, and terrible warping that would keep the film from being able to be nothing. All the splices had been had melted tape, and it was completely unusable film, so brittle and so dry that it couldn't be unspooled without flaking apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the challenge, and the people who rose to that challenge were the lab L'Immagine Ritrovata at the Cineteca Bologna in Italy, and they're really specialists in dealing with actual film. They had handled fire-damaged film before. They felt with a high degree of confidence that they would be able to rehydrate the film, and if they would get it to unspool safely, and then we would be able to see what was on it. Satyajit Ray, he's far too little known, but in his time, one of the first majors into what we now recognize was the golden age of international cinema. We had Akira Kurosawa emerged in 1952 with Rashomon. Satyajit Ray emerged in 1955 with Padre Panchali, and then the trilogy, which release after release gained in popularity. Then, they're contemporary with Fellini and Antonioni, and all of these filmmakers who's last been known to cinephiles, around the world, and he's informed by the films are informed by so much work of the. Ray was an omnivorous movie viewer. He loved cinema, and he grew up in Calcutta, which was the Raj, that was the capital of India at the, you know, under the Raj, and therefore had all sorts of strong cultural insults to support their, you know, all sorts of Western artworks and movies, not least among them. And Ray went to England and lived there for 6 months on a job with his advertising. He watched 99 films with his wife. Right. And really blew his mind was Bicycle Thieves by Vittorio De Sica.
Of course.
And he went back to Bengal with the idea that he was going to make a film using Italian...
Like a neorealism type thing? Yeah.
In a Bengali village. And that's the, you know, these are the films that we see. So what we really think of, if you ask me for particularly the place of these films as opposed to just Ray,
mm-hmm.
I would say that these films represent, in many ways, the post-war flowering of a truly global international cinema consciousness, where people are seeing direct expressions by places that are very far away, and rather than making them seem exotic, they made them seem universal and understandable. That's what made these humanist filmmakers like Renoir, like De Sica. And, you know, we shouldn't forget that Renoir met Ray and inspired Ray to become a filmmaker. Renoir went to India to make a film, The River, with Rumer Gordon, which is why Ray met him when he volunteered to go scout locations. But I guess what I'm really saying is that there's a universality to these films, and because of the combination of, I think, they're increasingly international consciousness in the post-war period, and also the needs for reconciliation in the period after the war, you know, the arts and particularly cinema became a very important way of us getting to know each other around the world, and that's how we saw Japan and India, Germany and France, you know, Italy and England and Latin America, and even in the 60s we start to see more films coming even out of Africa, and these are all direct expressions in a reproducible art form that allowed us to literally lay eyes on other places that we might only have been able to read about or see a still photograph from before. And they're expressions that are being made by filmmakers, informed by world cinema, but very, very, very much of their own cultures. And I think that's, you know, more than anything to me, that's what Ray represents, is the arrival on the scene of that global consciousness in cinema.
Absolutely. And when you watch it, his style is very, it's not flashy or showy or overly exaggerated with camera moves. It's a lot of times it's kind of a static, locked off shot. Using that frame is usually what happens. The action happens within the frame. He's not moving around.
But his rhythms are really peculiar and interesting. They're not like other filmmakers. Even though the camera work seems very understated, what it sees is really beautiful.